Hey Steele, how you doing?
Fantastic, Dave. How about you?
I'm great, Steele. I got a friend with me today.
Hello.
Hello. Who am I hearing?
This is Katie.
Katie. So glad to hear
Hello.
your voice.
It probably sounds weird because it is.
So Katie's one of my favorite coworkers. She's a female nurse, which is actually the majority in the nursing
It's
profession.
a pink collar profession.
Pink collar.
Dave
I
wears it
like
well.
that.
Dave wears it well.
Yeah. So I wanted to get the voice of the majority, because you only ever hear from the male nursing perspective. So I brought on a female nurse.
That's awesome. Thanks, Dave. This is probably gender stereotyping, but usually people just say nurse and then they add male to specify, like, he is a male nurse. But usually when you introduce yourself, Katie, do you say, I'm a female nurse?
I do not. I say I'm a nurse.
See, Dave always says, I'm a male nurse.
This is an interesting topic, Steele. This is a very straightforward situation.
It's part of a discrimination that I've been facing for my entire nursing career.
Wow, that is true.
It started in clinicals when they wouldn't let me go in to see childbirth, and it continues now.
You weren't allowed to see childbirth?
No, yeah, they'd be like, no, he's a male. He's out. Get him out of the room.
Wow. My best friend, who happens to be a homosexual nurse, see, there you go, a homosexual male nurse, had to hold a leg and witness the whole thing, like, in his face.
Did he explain his sexual orientation beforehand, or
No,
they were okay?
no.
Okay.
Maybe it was
That
just
would
a sensing
violate so many laws. It really would.
I mean, the lady didn't speak English. She seemed okay with it. She didn't know.
So before the start of the show, I was talking with Katie a little bit yesterday, if we could like share any nursing stories, because I know you love them. But pretty much we decided no, because any nursing story either makes one of us look incompetent or explains how one of our patients is crazy, and it's just not appropriate for it. We just can't talk about it
We
as much
really
as
can't.
I want to tell you still, but I can't do it.
It's HIPAA, right? I mean, I'm
Right.
glad you
It's
respect that law.
HIPAA. It's the nursing gods. They literally strike us down.
And I don't want people to know the degree of my competence as a nurse. Like, as far as you know, I'm an excellent nurse. I want it to stay that way.
Yeah.
He's not. He is not.
But so anyway, this episode's going to be fun because Katie's here.
Yay.
You may or may not know, she was a college softball player. So she is going to be the first ever guest on our segment called Expert Testimony. We're also going to do a little bit of small talk. We're going to take some questions, a little ask off the chain. We'll do some Unchained Melodies, and Steele, you've got some book wisdom for us, from what I understand.
Ooh,
But
definitely.
before all that, I think we got a couple questions for you, Steele.
Ask away.
Okay, Steele, you are going to be a doctor of poetry. What does that mean?
And is that correct?
Well, yes and no, but mostly no.
Oh.
The reason why I say mostly no is you sounded so confident that I'm going to become this thing. Now, I've been in school for many years to do it, but I'm no closer to being a doctor than I was
Still, you have to
4 years
have
ago.
faith, babe. You have to have
Yeah,
faith.
I have the faith, but faith without works is dead. See, Katie, I haven't
Oh,
done the work
man.
that I need to do.
Now, is it the work entail writing of poetry? Is that what the
No,
work
I
is?
wish. So I am getting a PhD in English, and it's literary studies. So the thing that I study is poetry, but
Okay.
I'm writing prose about poetry. I'm the worst of the cannibals, really. I'm just
Oh my
parasites.
gosh. That is fantastic.
So think about the general audience for poetry, right? It's very small to begin with. Now think of
No,
the audience for people
no.
who want to read books that are not poetry about poetry. That's who I'm working for, and that's
On
the
the edge
kind
of
of,
my seat, Steele.
yeah.
I'm on the edge of my seat.
It's a burgeoning field. There's tons of people who want to hire us once we finish our 7 or 8 year PhD.
I
It's a,
really believe that.
yeah.
So, what is the end goal for this? Where do you see yourself in a few years now?
Well, judging by my peers, I would say frustration and poverty are the end goals. And most of
Wow.
my peers are really excelling at accomplishing both thus far.
So much to look forward to.
I saw an article, I think it's on Slate. It was about adjunct university professors and how like somewhere around 25% of them are receiving federal aid, that it's not a wealthy field.
No, adjuncting is tough. And
that's what you do?
No, thankfully. I have an actual job now that's not related to poetry, which has been a lifesaver. But the end goal, the dream of mine, I went to graduate school because I thought I wanted to be a professor, a tenure track English professor. And that may be where I end up. That's the idea that if you get an English PhD, that's what you're most qualified or prepared to do. Increasingly, though, there are fewer and fewer of these tenure track jobs and more English PhDs. So you have a situation where there's more supply than demand, and you get this adjunct situation with a bunch of tenuous, precarious jobs, or you have people with PhDs in English that are doing stuff that's not being a professor. That's like, oh, I'm going to be a copywriter for an ad agency or something else that I didn't need a PhD for. But, you know, spent the 7 years, had a good time.
Might as well do it. Keep it going.
Yeah.
So, but I think my primary question and probably the greatest difference between the two of us is one of us thinks poetry is off the chain while another one of us probably does not think that. So why poetry? Why are you into it? What does poetry do for you?
Well, I think of it as, so poetry is this super ancient human practice, and it used to have a much larger social or communal function, but poets were the memory of the race. Like if you had something in your culture that was important that you wanted to transmit to future generations, you did it through poetry. Poetry was the way that you could remember long passages of stories and pass them on. So historically, there's like that really important human function. But for me, I think poetry is essentially like the ultimate refinement or distillation of verbal expression. So if you like language and you like language beautifully expressed, then poetry is like the pinnacle of that. It's the very best of linguistic expression in the most musical, beautiful, compressed way. And for me, that's really exciting.
I just want to correct you because you misspoke. The pinnacle of language is actually Vin Diesel dialogue in all of his films.
Absolutely.
So poetry would be a number two. Yeah. I just wanted to correct that real quick.
Yeah.
Vin Diesel has definitely changed more lives than any poet, I would say.
Probably.
So who would you say like has changed your life poet-wise?
Wow, that's a really good question. The poets that I'm writing my dissertation about are poets that are really, really important to me. And there's a group called the Objectivists, and there's three of them that are really, really close to my heart. The first one is a man named Charles Reznikoff. And he's not very well known, but he was this New York Jew, lived in the beginning to the middle of the 20th century, died in the 70s. And he was one of the earliest documentary poets working in English. He was trained as a lawyer, but never practiced law. And so he collected these huge records of American experience, of ordinary experience and of violence and of all of these things from legal records and turned it into poetry. He would also just record kind of everyday experiences from his walks through New York City or his life and write them in these very simple, compressed, kind of beautiful, but very blunt and honest little poems. And for me, they're incredibly moving. And very plain, very direct, very honest, very little embellishment. So it's not what people often think of as like emotive rhyming poetry, but there's something really powerful about it. And about his interest in the whole breadth of human experience, especially the ordinary.
I want to know Charlie now.
Oh, well, maybe I'll replace the thing at the end and share one of his poems instead.
Ooh, I like it.
That'd be great.
And then the other two who matter even more to me, closer to my heart, there was a woman from Wisconsin whose name was Loreen Nedeker. And she lived in a little town called Fort Atkinson between Madison and Milwaukee. Lived most of her life in poverty, working menial jobs. She cleaned floors at a hospital. She was a proofreader, but she lost her sight and so lost that job. Was a cleaning woman. Did lots of different kind of menial jobs. But her whole life she was writing these beautiful, small, super compressed poems. I'll just recite one of her poems. It's called Poet's Work. Grandfather advised me, learn a trade. I learned to sit at desk and condense. No layoff from this condensery.
Wow.
It's just it. And so there's tons and tons I could say about that poem and I could unfold it. But what she's essentially saying is that the job of the poet is to condense, to condense, to condense, and strip out everything that's superfluous, everything that's unnecessary. And you can never get fired from this job, in part because nobody's paying you to do it. But that's another discussion.
That seems to be a running theme so far. It doesn't seem like we have a huge amount of financially successful poets other than, I think, Shel Silverstein.
Yeah,
oh,
it's true. Yeah. It's very difficult to make a living from your poems. And the third, the guy who matters most to me, probably my favorite poet, he's probably changed my life more than any other writer, it was a man named George Oppen. He and his wife, Mary, were just extraordinary people and really incredible writers. And I love him. I love the way he writes letters. I love his poems. I love the way he lived and conducted his life. He's a real hero in literature and in life for me.
I feel like you and your wife emulate them. Because isn't she in poetry as well?
Yes, we both do write poems, but it's a high bar. We're trying to do our best. Maybe one day, yeah.
Nice. I like it. Well, I remember I took a college class, actually, that was a literature class.
You went to college?
Barely.
Excellent.
But I did take a poetry class, and the only thing that I feel like I learned from it, no offense, I did love the poems.
No, it's fine.
But the actual poets themselves and how potentially crazy they were.
Yeah.
And I've actually established a list.
Of crazy poets?
That I want
poets?
You to tell me. So I'm going to call it genius or completely insane, and you need to tell me.
All right.
Number one, William Shakespeare.
Genius. Total genius.
Absolutely. Number two, Lord Byron.
Insane.
Number three, Emily Dickinson.
Both. Very much both.
Nice!
Very
I love
much.
It.
Oh, man. She's the most insane genius probably in American literature.
Absolutely. Man, I love this.
Okay, you gotta, if you want to look up something that's like skin crawling, creepy, and awesome at the same time.
Yes.
Just Google Emily Dickinson, Dear Master. She wrote these really weird kind of submissive, dominant letters to this religious figure. Just look at the, it's like 50 Shades of Grey kind of creepy.
Wow.
Dear Master,
Emily Dickinson. I like her so much more now.
You're going to. They're going to make you kind of, but also like, wow.
Like, what's going on in there?
A lot.
Okay. So number four, Oscar Wilde.
Oh, I'm gonna say decadent genius.
Mm-hmm.
His problem was that he was really interested in being basically out in a time when it was illegal. So he files a lawsuit saying, this person libeled me. They said that I was a sodomite, that I was gay. When he was very clearly openly gay. And I'm like, it can't be libel if it's true or slander if it's true. So they had a big court case where he gets publicly exposed as like illegally gay. And then he goes to prison for 3 years and it breaks him. And he dies basically at the end of his prison term.
Man.
So he dies in his early 40s basically because he was so upset that someone slandered him that he filed a lawsuit even though he couldn't win it. I mean, it was
completely true.
That's a little crazy, but also really brave. It's sad because you don't want someone to have to die in prison because they were gay. That's a terrible thing.
Right. That's terrible. Such a different time. All right. We'll finish it off with Miss Sylvia Plath.
Crazy.
Just crazy.
No,
she
actually
put her head in an oven.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, I feel empathy for her. I think she had a really difficult marriage to Ted Hughes and was dealing with the pressure of being a mother of small kids, and it doesn't sound like a very good situation. There were certainly gender pressures on her that were unfair. But
for sure. Man, you know so much about these people. It's amazing.
Thanks.
And I just wanted to insert one of my own. Shel Silverstein.
Crazy.
Genius. Crazy.
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 And you've heard all of Dr. Hook and the Medicine Show's songs because he wrote the lyrics for those.
Well, genius then.
Okay.
I didn't know that. He wrote the lyrics for Dr. Hook?
Yeah, he wrote the lyrics for Dr. Hook.
You make my pants want to get up and dance? Did he write that?
You make my pants want to get up and dance. You make my face want to grin. You make my knees want to kneel down, say please. Honey, won't you kiss me again? Yeah, spending the night together, all the classics.
Man, we need to put that in Unchained Melodies.
You should.
You know, our friend Howard, Dr. Hook was his thing for like a good decade. He'd listen to it all the time.
Yeah, he wrote us a question for Ask Off the Chain saying, why do we play all this wimpy crap music? Why don't we play more Jethro Tull?
Yes, I can't answer that. If you're assuming that Jethro Tull playing the flute is not wimpy, then I can't. I don't know what to say.
Yeah. There are no words.
I enjoyed listening to you talk a little bit about poetry. It was really interesting. It felt like our first episode when I was just talking about the Incredible Hulk. Like, I was still excited. I loved him so much. But this was what you love.
Yeah. Hey, thanks for bringing a guest on who actually cares about me, Dave. That's really nice of you.
Aww. Steel. You're welcome.
Yeah. The moment she heard your name, she was like, I got it. I want to
I was
talk
pretty
to
much
this
in.
Guy.
Hey, so Katie, let's talk about doing Off the Chain with Steele and Katie and cut this Dave guy out of it.
I like it. Okay. I'm in. I'm all about it. Maybe he can come on as a guest. Maybe.
Well, yeah. When we want to talk about comic books or something dumb, we can bring Dave on.
Right? Ridiculous. Vin Diesel.
So does he talk about this at work all the time? Is he always buttonholing other nurses?
Even the physicians will come up to him and be like, did you see the new penis? Like, they all know that he's obsessed.
Dave's marked out his corner in the hospital, huh?
You got to have something. If you're a male nurse, you need to go all in on Diesel or else, like, I don't know what they're going to think of you.
That's true. Yeah.
So this is compensation, huh?
Yes. I talk about weightlifting a lot as well. So
He shows off his muscles sometimes, too, on the rarest of occasions.
Does Dave have iron-on tattoos that he wears at work and pretend they're real?
Oh, gosh. No, but we need to get those.
Sweet tats, bro.
Sweet tats. You need a neck tattoo. You'll fit right in.
You know, this is my one work nursing story I feel like I can share. So when someone's having a particularly difficult time, I think this is funny and great for whatever reason. I ask them, hey, do you like the Eagles? Everyone likes the Eagles. Everyone says yes. You don't say no. And I say to them, then you need to take it easy, like the song, Take It Easy. And then I sing Take It Easy to them.
And it works, and huh?
It pretty much never works, but I love to try and help people through song.
Have you ever have you ever sung Witchy Woman? Maybe that would work.
Ooh, Witchy Woman.
I don't think that would go over well in the ICU. There's a lot of ICU like psychosis, delirium. Witchy Woman's bringing in a feeling I don't want the patients to have. I want them just to take it easy.
It might be too demonic.
Demonic.
Well, I'm ready to go. We're going to the next segment now. We're going to do some expert testimony. Now, I've let Steele know, Katie, that you were a college softball player, and he's got a lot of thoughts, a lot of questions for you.
Well, first of all, let's establish some kind of basic parameters, who, what, where, when, and why, and all that. So you were a college softball player. Where did you play your college softball?
I played at Indiana University.
Oh, Bloomington.
Bloomington.
Wow.
So close to you.
So were you a Midwesterner by birth or disposition?
No. Born and raised here in Arizona. My mom is from Kansas City, so I guess like by association.
You got recruited to be a...
I did.
To be a Hoosier.
I did, indeed.
So what's the biggest misconception that people have about the sport?
That everyone is gay.
So that's a pretty widespread belief?
Yeah, I mean, there's no truth to it. The percentage is probably the same as it is in the general population percentage, but because it is a small percentage of women playing, and with athletic women, sometimes you will tend to get a lesbian here and there. It's just an automatic like assumption that everybody is gay.
So did you face dating problems because of your participation with softball? Like, were guys intimidated?
Nope, not because of that. No,
it was your looks.
I'm just kidding. Because I'm just so sexy. I just proved it. No, not specifically, because I think I'm just generally like a bit on the girlier side of things, maybe. I'm tall and lean. That always helps because you're not like big and burly.
And still, you might want to remember that we started recording this podcast a little bit later because Katie was at a 2-hour long hair appointment today.
That's true.
Yeah.
That is true.
You've got all the bases covered, if you excuse my softball pun.
Hey-o! Grand slam right there. Thanks. That was a grand slam.
So, Katie, a couple other questions about softball career.
Okay.
What position did you play, and what was your great strength as a softballer?
So, I was a pitcher, which is probably the only thing I could have ever done because I'm so long. But my great strength, I would say, was probably, like, moving the ball. I wasn't a speed necessarily. Like, I didn't blow people away, but I could move the ball quite well. It's just a different approach, I guess you could say, to pitching. Changing the speed, changing the movement, things like that.
I wanted to ask a lot about this because softball, it seems to me pitching is such a different art in softball than it is in baseball. So I only played baseball, much smaller ball, throwed overhand with like a two-finger grip generally. How is a softball pitched? I'm not saying professional level, but like a high level. How are you throwing and how are you gripping and what's the approach to pitching?
Well, actually, each pitch has a different grip. So that is a big difference, is that you utilize the seams of the ball much more readily than I think baseball players do. I mean, I do utilize the seam, but with softball, you kind of have to in order to get the ball to move because it's a wider circumference.
Sure.
So, I mean, literally every pitch has a different grip.
And are you using the whole hand to grip generally? Or how many fingers are involved in the grip?
Usually 3 to 4.
Okay.
Like, including the thumb. So usually your pinky is not necessarily like a main focal point on the ball.
Sure.
The little guy doesn't quite get the support.
So what kind of pitches do softball pitchers throw?
The most common would be a rise ball. And that would be one that comes in. It looks as though it's going to be like right in your wheelhouse. Because usually people like the pitch that's kind of at the elbow.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a pitch that looks like it's going to come in right then. And then as it comes in, it rises out of reach, essentially.
And because you're releasing underhand, I'm thinking about the sinking action of a fastball in overhand baseball. So this is the opposite. So they're thinking it's hittable, but it's just rising as it comes in high, fast.
Exactly.
And
yeah.
How do you throw a curveball? I think about the overhand and you're hooking the fingers and using the shoulder, but is it the same?
Essentially. So you would take your elbow the opposite direction. So your elbow is essentially you like pretend like it's attached to your hip and then you whip the ball across your body.
Ooh. A lot of torque.
It's more wrist, actually. It's more wrist. It shouldn't be your elbow because that will definitely break something.
So we've got a rising fastball. We have, is it called the curveball? What do they call it?
It is called the curveball. Yep. Okay. You can curveball and then you can screwball. So you can go the opposite direction.
Okay. And it's easier since you're not using your elbow as much. The wrist can rotate both directions pretty easily.
Okay. Right.
Yep. How about change-ups or off-speed pitches?
Yep, that's a huge pitch. It was for me.
And does anybody throw something like an ephus? Like where they, like the blooper
like a
pitch?
Ball?
Like the blooper pitch, you know? Where it's like super slow and just breaks down through the, it would be like a slow pitch.
No, because you can't break that plane. So there's rules
understand.
On it.
So what's the rule?
I don't believe you can break more than two planes.
Oh, okay.
So if it goes up and then comes back down, or something like you start low, go up, and then come back down. That would be three planes.
I see.
So they have pretty specific rules on that. But you can do like a knuckleball, which I threw one time successfully in Minnesota. It was pretty fantastic.
Was it awesome?
Yeah.
How do you throw an underhand knuckleball?
Yeah, exactly. You have to use every single – so you hold the ball between your thumb and pinky, and you put your knuckles of the other three on one of the seams.
Uh-huh.
And then you have to like – hitch your arm and like push it. It's crazy.
That would be one awesome. Time. Okay, so in softball, do they have a designated hitter or are you also batting just like a position player?
Once I got to college, they did designate hit for me.
Okay. Was that a relief?
Yeah, I would say. I wasn't great at that aspect of it.
So you said you weren't known for your heat. You were known more for movement on the pitch.
Yeah.
Was there somebody on your staff that was just a flamethrower?
Yeah. She did throw really hard, but she also had an incredible rise ball. My rise ball was never quite where it should have been. I was more of the change up. I could get the ball to go, you know, curve, screwball, drop, but my rise ball never quite took off, but hers was incredible.
So tell me, like, what kind of speeds are we talking about? What's a really fast rise ball in women's softball?
Like the high 60s, like 68.
And it's coming for your head, too, so it's extra terrifying.
Kind of. I mean, it shouldn't actually be coming for your head, but yes.
What is it like for you as a batter to hit against a really hard thrower or a rise ball pitcher?
Impossible. I mean, it is so incredibly hard to hit a good rise ball. Like, you have to be able to try and see where the ball's going to end up before it gets there. But that's an impossibility. You can't know exactly where it's going to end up.
And it's a flat mound, right? There's not a raised mound because you're throwing underhanded?
Right.
Okay. Distances? similar distances or to
baseball? No, we're at 43 feet.
40. So it's even. Oh, man. That'd be super terrifying. Close. I would not want to face a rise ball at all.
with that distance, was there like balls flying at you all the time at high speeds or
sometimes? Yeah, that was. I still have nightmares, guys. Every once in a while, like my stress nightmare is that I'm on the pitching mound and I, for some reason, can't see. Like I go blind or something happens, and I have to pitch, and like I can't see if the ball's coming back at me.
That would be like a total terror dream. Balls.
Yes.
I just saw somebody got hit in the face by a line drive in the major leagues a day or two ago, and it looked terrifying.
Gosh. It is. It's so terrifying, and it's happened. It's really scary.
How many times were you hit by a pitch or hit by a line drive in your career?
I'd say probably like 4 or 5. Only two that I remember very specifically. One was in the wrist, and I thought that I had broken my wrist. I did not. And the other was directly in my abdomen. So my dad made me go to the doctor to make sure I could still have children. That's all he was concerned about.
I'm not concerned about you, honey. I'm concerned about your reproductive organs.
Exactly. That's exactly what I was like, Dad, I'm 16 years old. Like, what is wrong with you?
But good news still, she does have a daughter. So we're okay.
We're good.
You made it.
I made it. Softball did not ruin that aspect.
Now, Steele's asked a lot of good questions, but I have actually some important ones.
Okay.
Did you ever have a nickname playing softball? Oh. If so, what was it?
Such good questions. Okay. I was that girl, and I think because I'm just so goofy and like awkward, I want to say 8 nicknames. We'll go with the top 3. So the first nickname that was given to me was Katie Longlegs, and then it just got shortened to Legs.
Nice.
A little awkward. Then there was a time that somebody put grass in my hair. So we had French braids, and they put grass like sticking straight out of my hair. And so my coach started calling me Spike.
Oh, nice. Cute.
That one really caught on. I was not a fan of that one.
That has pretty butch overtones too, you know?
Really butch, exactly. And I'm like, the least butch one. I'm like, stop calling me that. Like, you're really affecting my self-esteem here, people. And then the third one, I mean, I was number 8 because of Gina Davis. So I would
we
get
will
like,
explore that in just a second.
Yeah, that's very in great detail.
So there's a lot of like Ocho, like all of those things. Spike is the one that really, really caught on, which is unfortunate for me.
At least no one ever called you like Beardy McBearderson. Wouldn't that be the worst softball nickname?
That would be pretty bad.
Yeah, that's number one. Everyone's afraid that's going to be their
Beardy
nickname.
Beardy McBearderson.
Oh, they're like, I'm trying so hard to control this growth, but everyone notices. Going to join the circus or something.
Or like Chest Hair McGee.
Oh, man. That'd be bad for a softball player, too.
That would be real bad.
So my primary exposure to women with bats and balls would be through one film, A League of Their Own. Now, we've talked about this a little bit. From what I understand, your inspiration to play softball comes from this film. Is that accurate?
Well, I started playing before it actually came out, but once it came out, it exponentially propelled my love for it.
So you probably wouldn't have a college education if it weren't for this movie. Is that what you're telling us?
I mean, I would have been forced to go to college. My parents are very pro-college. But it would not have been the same, that's for sure.
So that's potential inspiration from the film. You've got Madonna, Rosie O'Donnell, Gina Davis, and the other girl. What do you get from these characters? Who inspires you?
Gina Davis by far. Because she was like the tough, girly, feminine one, the best on the team. I think just about every girl probably strives to be like the sexy, amazing one, right?
It's a shock. You weren't really into becoming the Rosie O'Donnell character.
I would have
thought
more
teenage girls really aspire to that.
It's true.
So my frustration I have with this film is that
it's not
Gina
long enough.
Gina drops the ball. That is not long enough. Zing. Zing steal. That was a zing.
Yeah, how do you feel? Do you feel betrayed when Gina drops the ball? What feelings do you have there?
Ugh.
And hang on, spoiler alert for those of you who haven't seen it yet.
Right, it's true. You still gotta watch it, guys. It's so good. I mean, she was doing it for the love of her sister. It's like the 1992 version of Frozen, right? You love your sister so much. Yeah, you do anything.
It's beautiful.
So here's a question, Katie, that's kind of connected to that. I play pickup sports now, and okay. I played in a couple of co-ed competitive leagues, and I find it's a very different experience for me to have generally male teammates and female teammates. It's so much better if you want to have a good time to have female teammates.
Oh, I was not expecting you to go that route.
Oh, orders of magnitude.
Wow.
It's for me, like, at least.
What definitively is what makes it better with females?
Way lower ratio of jerks. And we're playing pickup sports or co-ed sports. It's not a super competitive environment, or it shouldn't be. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of dudes who just are like 100%, 110%, like yelling at teammates in the game, or like taking it super seriously and not having fun, or like won't even look at someone on the other team or say something to them.
It's trying to relive the glory days.
Totally. It's awful. But when you were just describing, like, Gina Davis does it for her sister, like, the love of family matters more than the competitive instinct. Was that true to your experience as playing a women's team sport? Was there more sense of camaraderie or competition, or how did that balance out on the teams you played on?
I mean, there was definite times, like, when you go through, like, a really intensely hard workout and you do it all together, and that, like, builds you as a team. But not necessarily any fighting or any kind of, I don't know, insanity between teams. Like, there were definite times that we would have, like, our rivalry team and we would play and there would be some talking or some things that would go down. But I think females in general, just that testosterone isn't there to, like, really, like, rev it up to a point of making it crazy.
Blood sport.
The blood sport. It's not happening. No.
And then I have another important question as well. A clubhouse hijinks.
Yeah. Great question.
Clubhouse hijinks.
Oh.
Locker room pranks.
Well, so every road trip that we would go on, because they put you in the opposing locker room or like the guest locker room, and we would always steal something. So in our locker room, we had like a treasure trove of things that we had stolen from other schools.
You're like Vikings.
We were like Vikings. And sometimes they would put us in their locker room and there would be lockers that were left unlocked. And that was the best.
Wait, what kind of items are stealable from a softball locker room?
We would get, well, because, you know, you have practice uniforms. So we would steal like a shirt. Like, I think we had like an Iowa XXL shirt.
Iowa recruit a bunch of porkers for their team or what? I mean, what are they doing with XXL shirts?
Damn it.
I have a sister-in-law who's a big Hawkeye. She's going to take that personal.
Oh, no. I'm sorry, sister-in-law. It had nothing to do with their size. I think they all said XXL.
Corn-fed. They're corn-fed.
Maybe. And in Purdue, we stole a sign. Purdue something or other, Boilermakers. We stole that.
And you didn't, like, deface this stuff or do anything. You just took it and kept it as, like, a trophy or something.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like, really weird treasure bits. And we would usually have lost, and then we would steal something and then bring it back to our locker room. I don't know why we did that.
Did you ever play Wisconsin? They're a Big Ten team, right?
Oh, of course we did.
What'd you steal from Madison?
I don't know. I can't remember. But I do remember the Wisconsin softball team all had scooters.
Yeah. That's big here, like, on campus with our athletes.
It's really big. The entire team would have scooters. So they would, from their locker room, they would scoot. That's my term for it. They would scoot to the field because the field wasn't close to the locker room. They also had a woman on.
We need to clarify for Dave. Dave, these are motorized scooters. They're not like razors. They're not like push scooters.
I was imagining, razors.
Your face was looking baffled.
Scooters? Like, what?
Motorized scooters. And they would have like their bags with their bats, you know, sticking out like over their shoulders as they're scooting to the field. It was amazing. And sometimes there would be like more than one girl. they shouldn't have been on the same scooter. You know, you're just like, that one's not going
to
last.
There's like a Vespa dealership close to campus, and it's like athlete heaven there.
Yeah, I think the football team also would scoot.
Yeah, yeah.
Very interesting.
Everybody from the football team has scooters, and they never wear
helmets. Met the most interesting people at Wisconsin. They also had a female shortstop who actually, surprisingly, I found incredibly attractive because of how much she looked like a man.
Oh.
Like, it was a very confusing thing in my brain where I was like, I find you attractive. But because you look so much like a man, I'm so confused right now.
It's college. College is a confusing time.
It was a confusing time.
You had to do some experimenting.
And I had terrible gaydar. I thought maybe she wasn't gay. She was.
Yeah, yeah. Just tell her, hey, keep the helmet on. Keep the helmet on. We can do this.
Yeah. Oh, well, no.
First date, she's wearing a batting helmet everywhere, and you're into it.
As sexy as that is, Steele, I don't think I'm going to go for that.
A little late maybe now, but...
Too late. I'm sure she's very happy looking like Justin Bieber somewhere.
So now it's been a few years since you've played college athletics.
It's true.
Are you glad? What is your overarching feeling from going through that?
Oh man, this is such a good question. I made some of the best friendships that I still am so thankful to, like people that I have in my life to this day because of doing that and participating on a team where you are so close for 4 years. But in general, I don't know if it was worth it, honestly. Like, if I were to be completely honest looking back, because it hindered my education as far as
travel and study time, I think have
exactly.
to be yeah
exactly like I could never have done anything more than what I did, because I could have never taken the MCAT because I couldn't take all the classes that were necessary for taking the MCAT, or the amount of schooling extra that I would have needed to do anything slightly more substantial. Not that nursing is not substantial, but I didn't graduate with a nursing degree. I had to like go back. I've literally taken the longest route to become a nurse because of the fact that I got my undergrad in something random and had to go back into nursing school. So I mean, just time wise if I hadn't done that, I could be maybe slightly further in my career or more successful in what I'm doing. But
hey, Katie, you're a relief charge nurse in an ICU. You're doing great.
Doing great. Doing
you made really it. Good. Yeah, you really made it.
I made it.
Yeah, because for me, the reason I loved college so much is I had zero responsibility.
Yeah.
I majored in communications. You got a B for just like enrolling in the classes. And like, I didn't do anything. I just like screwed around for 3 or 4 years. It was awesome.
I didn't get to do that. I didn't get to do any of that.
This is the thing where, so I taught a couple of courses, summer courses for athletes here at UW-Madison.
Oh, they're really?
All football and basketball players. There was a few women's basketball and women's hockey players as well. But it was mostly male athletes, football, basketball, hockey.
Okay.
And this was the summer before their freshman year. So they're straight out of high school and they're thrown into this college environment. This is their first college class. It was a freshman writing class. But the thing that struck me was just how profoundly regimented their lives were. Mm-hmm. Way more than the average college student.
And
I would have found that terribly restrictive and really not that fun. They were working like a serious, almost full-time job and trying to do classes. And their job was like very demanding, high performance, discouraging because they were just getting beat up. Just beat up as freshmen.
Yeah. I mean, just the entire college experience was the most mentally and physically difficult thing I've ever done. I've never been more physically sore, mentally and emotionally exhausted. You know, like you reach a total breaking point where I would fall asleep literally doing, like in the middle of doing things because I was just so done.
Was the sports itself an emotional roller coaster? Like, when was the last time you cried after a game?
The very last game that I pitched, I cried just because it was over and it was like this overwhelming sense of relief and like accomplishment and just being done and how hard it was. So I absolutely cried, but not because of anything that happened, just because of the emotion involved. But it was almost more like a crying of relief that it was over. Like, I was just so burnt out and so done.
That's why Mormon missionaries cry when they come home from their missions.
Yeah, I believe that. Because it is. I mean, that's a similar thing. I mean, it's 2 years of being in an uncomfortable situation, living in an uncomfortable environment, possibly speaking a language that you're not comfortable with. It's a very similar thing.
Still, I remember walking off the plane. Like, I didn't really have any emotion. I was like, why would I cry when I see my family? Like, that was literally going through my head. And then, like, the second I saw my parents and my siblings, it was like I was just a little baby. I was just crying, just waterworks. It was so emotional. Like, do you remember? How was that for you?
Yeah, I remember for sure. The thing I remember probably even more vividly was getting on the airplane to come home. On the flight, they had in-air radio, and I was like, forget it, I'm listening to music. And it felt so sweet. Like, I remember on my mission going to get my hair cut, and they were playing U2. I don't really like U2, but I started crying, almost crying, thinking, like, this is the greatest song I've ever heard, because I hadn't heard any real music for months. I missed it so bad.
Where did you go for your mission?
I went to England as well. Different part of England, but the Northeast.
Oh, crazy.
It was awful.
That's pretty much the sense I've gotten from Dave as well.
Yeah.
It was beautiful still. But I want to say, I listened to the radio on the airplane as well. And the greatest thing that could possibly happened. Like, at that time, my favorite rock band in the world was Wilco. And there was a Wilco song on the plane radio.
No.
I remember something similar. Like, I wrote down like 15 bands' names that I was going to check out as soon as I got home. They'd all put out new records on this alternative radio station on the plane. I was like, this is great. This is so great. I made a little handwritten list. I wonder if I could find it, of stuff I heard on the plane ride home.
Wait, did you watch the movie on the plane ride home?
No. No, I didn't. I thought that'd be too much rule breaking.
I watched it. It was.
Oh, you're such a rebel!
It was. I mean, it was my big fat Greek wedding.
Such a great movie. Were you so happy watching that movie?
It was such a terrible movie.
It's so good.
That's not up Dave's alley at all. You know what was playing on my plane ride? It was X-Men 2 or something, Dave.
What?
You would have peed your pants for joy at that one. I would have rather watched Big Fat Greek Wedding for sure, personally.
Thank you, Steele. We're like best friends.
Yeah. But I was sitting next to our friend Dan Jinnajon on the way home on that plane.
Oh, you were?
He didn't watch it. The thing I most remember is there was a scene where they're like in the car making out, mm-hmm. and I took my headphones off and I looked down for a few minutes. It was too much for me.
Oh, man.
I couldn't handle it.
That's a lot after 2 years.
It was a PG film, and it was just...
too much. It's too much. That's so funny.
Or something. I don't know if funny is the word.
I think we're good. I don't know. Do you want to sum up softball in any way?
Do you have something, Steele? It looked like you had something.
What I was just going to say was, what was the question that you wished we would have asked you about softball?
Honestly, it's been so long and it feels like it's literally another lifetime ago.
Yeah.
That I don't even have.
That's how I feel about being Mormon sometimes.
More to say. Yeah. Like, there's literally nothing more. I hear you, brother. I hear you. Yeah. There's really nothing more to say. It was a part of my life that changed me forever. And I'm so thankful and grateful for it. But I'm so also so glad it's over.
Would you say that thing, Steele?
Yeah. I'm glad that I was raised Mormon and had that influence in my life, but I'm so glad I'm not now.
Yeah.
I don't need to keep that in the podcast, but yeah, that's how I feel for sure.
Real, Steele. We're getting real right now.
Totally.
So that was awesome. I'm not sure how to bring it back. But we're going to bring it back to small talk, Steele.
Great.
We've done this segment enough to where I feel like you finally might be able to explain it. What's small talk?
Small talk is you're going to find yourself in an awkward conversation. You're going to be in a conversation where you're at a social event, you've got to talk to somebody, and it's not going well. You're like, what do I talk about? And it's also important that you want to make a good impression. You want to have them leaving saying, that person was interesting, intelligent, and otherwise a fascinating human. Small talk will help you. We're going to give
I need this.
A couple of topics that you can pull out of your pocket and say, boom, I'm interesting.
And I think this is important for you, Katie.
It's so important.
I think
I'm
you need this.
The most
judging
awkward
by the last half hour, is that what you're trying to say, Dave? Should have done small talk first.
Very awkward.
Yeah, softball players are not known for their small talk. It's just not.
And that is true.
The thing I'm probably the most excited about is the Brontosaurus steal. Ooh. Are you aware that we lost the Brontosaurus for a while?
I had heard some kind of rumors and nonsense, but I just ignored them. It didn't fit with my worldview, so I kept the Brontosaurus in my heart. Same with the planet Pluto. People are saying Pluto's not a planet.
Thank you, Steele.
That's bogus. Pluto will always be a planet to me. My very energetic mother just served me 9. She didn't just serve you 9. She had to serve you 9 pizzas, right?
Right.
How will you ever use that mnemonic again if Pluto's not there?
Thank you.
It's the same as the Brontosaurus.
I've got good news on one front of what you're talking about. Brontosaurus is back for years. Since the early 20th century, people have been telling us that there's no more Brontosaurus. It was Apatosaurus is what they were saying. Like, Brontosaurus doesn't count. It's Apatosaurus, which means, I'll tell you the meaning of both of them. Apatosaurus means deceptive lizard versus Brontosaurus. Do you know what Brontosaurus means?
Noble king or something, right?
Way cooler. Thunder lizard.
Whoa. Yeah. Deceptive lizard versus thunder lizard? No contest.
No contest.
I don't want to let go of the Brontosaurus. I never have. I've never jumped on the Apatosaurus bandwagon. Why is the Brontosaurus so important, and why am I so happy it's back?
I think it's because it's our childhood. Littlefoot was the Brontosaurus. You can't just take out Littlefoot.
I would be fine losing the Triceratops because that Sarah dinosaur sucked.
Gosh, she was the worst.
And my little sister was named Sarah, who was my rival. So it confirmed every suspicion I had.
That is confirmation.
And I thought about this film earlier because the wonderful, just nice dinosaur that doesn't talk, do you know what his name was?
Petrie?
No,
he's the little one that was always...
He's a little cute pterodactyl. Spike.
Oh, Spike. Yeah, that was your nickname. Maybe they were inspired by that. Maybe you looked like a short, fat, silent dinosaur to them.
Maybe. Dang it.
But I'm excited the Brontosaurus is back. I think this is a great subject. You bring this up anywhere, like, people are going to get excited. People want to talk about the Brontosaurus.
When you say the Brontosaurus is back, what do you mean, Dave?
Yeah, I never even explained it. You're a thinker, Steele. I just was reading a New Yorker article. Essentially, they found with further research and further comparison, there's a total of 477 morphological characteristics that are different between the Apatosaurus and the Brontosaurus. It really is its own genus or species, whatever you want to say. So it's real. People can finally agree on it. They've been going back and forth for years. In fact, there were 2 dinosaur experts in the late 1800s that were kind of battling over. They would each find like a bone, and then they'd start naming dinosaurs. So between the two of these guys, they would name like one dinosaur 10 different things. They were just butting heads. And I think the Brontosaurus was kind of caught in the crosshairs. They wanted to discredit each other. What they ended up doing was taking away the Brontosaurus, which was a terrible, terrible thing that they did to all of us.
Yeah, leave your rivalries at home, scientists. Just give us the unvarnished truth about the Brontosaurus.
Exactly.
So that's what I got for you there. Steele, what did you bring for small talk?
Okay, so here's the deal. We get some feedback from a friend of ours. You know Rose, Dave?
Yeah, great.
She said that our show had basically turned into a sausage fest. There's just two dudes talking about dude topics all the time. And I thought, you know, she's probably right. We have not done a very good job at producing gender balance on our show. So, I mean, granted, she was a former softball player, so it's not really tipping the scales that far. But Katie's on the show today, so that's good.
Yay! And I am a female.
Biologically speaking. It's
biologically speaking, as far as we know.
but so the thing that I want to contribute to small talk is actually an important woman's topic.
Ooh.
So there's a new book by a Harvard historian named Jill Lepore about Wonder Woman.
Oh, tell me more.
Okay. I didn't know any of this backstory, but the book is primarily about the creation of Wonder Woman, but also about the guy who invented her. And the guy who invented her is super weird.
Really?
Yes.
Weird in what way?
Weird in just about every kind of interesting, creepy way you could imagine. His name was William Moulton Marston. He was a Harvard-trained psychologist. And as he was working, he's the guy who invented the blood pressure detector that ended up being the first lie detector test.
No way.
So he invented the technology that gave us the lie detector test. And then he wrote a book about it in which it was filled with lies about his research and about what it could do, which was a great irony.
So he fabricated everything.
Not everything, but most of his claims were like made up to sell books. So he goes from being like a Harvard professor and works his way down out of a job, basically. And so he basically invents a bunch of kind of con man careers in lots of different ways. But one of the things that he does is invent Wonder Woman. And one of the super interesting things about Wonder Woman is his theory. He did this research among female undergraduates at Harvard, and his premise was women love to be tied up, basically.
What?
Like in a kind of strange, kinky way.
Yeah.
He tells DC Comics editor, the secret of woman's allure is that women enjoy submission, being bound. It's not sadism, because his comic book character, Wonder Woman, never suffers or feels embarrassed. She just enjoys being bound, needs to enjoy submission to kind authority, wise authority, and then she escapes and fights her way out of it somehow. So in almost every episode of Wonder Woman, she gets tied up in some way. She's always getting tied up.
That is so interesting.
But he's also married to a woman. They're happily married. They have kids. He gets involved with this undergraduate student named Olive Byrne. He brings her home and tells her wife, either Olive can live with us or I'm going to leave you. And so his wife says, okay. Olive moves in, and then he ends up having 5 children with the 2 different women over the years. So he's basically living with his 2 wives, and they become like a big love-style family.
That's crazy.
It's super crazy. And he's related to Margaret Sanger, who's like the big contraceptive rights crusader for women.
Oh, yeah.
So that's a relative. So he's a progressive, like, women's right kind of dude. But in his personal life, I don't know how to describe it other than creepy.
Yeah. So interesting, like a dichotomy of like male dominance versus progressive women's rights versus what?
Let me untie you, Wonder Woman.
Right,
kind of thing.
Exactly. Like, I will release you because I am the man.
So, and Wonder Woman is, by a significant margin, the most famous female comic book character. Really interesting that
she... And the most emancipated, and the most, like, in some ways, the strongest, the most kick-ass for a long time.
Yeah, she will probably be the first, you know, female character to get her own movie. It's Wonder Woman, and she's invented by this wonderful man. Quite a character.
So there's been a couple of reviews about it, a longer one in the New York Times Review of Books, and I read a thing about it in Book Forum that caught my attention, and it blew my mind. I really want to read the book now.
Yeah. You're going to have to come back and tell us everything about it.
Yeah.
I could keep talking about that for much longer, but this is small talk.
Yeah.
So we're going to the next topic. Steele, you probably remember when I got pretty sick in college, or you were married at the time, so you don't even know.
Yeah. But I just heard you almost died. Spencer made a little radio piece about it.
Holy moly.
So it was my immune system was going crazy. So how they calmed it down is they gave me steroids. And at the time, I was like, steroids? Sweet. Like, you know, I was thinking, like, not only is this going to relax my immune system, but I'm finally going to bulk up. Like, things are going to happen for me.
Things are really going to happen.
But it's a common misconception still. Katie, can you address that?
I can. So there's the anabolic form of steroids, which is the testosterone or human growth hormone based steroids. And then there are the steroids that Dave received, which are glucocorticoids.
Glucocorticoids?
Yes.
You don't want the glucocorticoids.
You don't want those. They just decrease inflammation and lower your immune system. That's it. That's all they do.
Nothing with acne or anything like that?
I mean, you get weird, actually, probably not the acne because it's an anti-inflammatory. So, like, you're not really going to get the acne, but you're going to get all kinds of other weird things because it affects your hormones, your hormone levels in your body. So you can end up with, like, a moon face and, like, all these just, like, crazy different.
You can get the jitters, have a tough time sleeping. Mm-hmm. It can even affect your personality a little bit.
Does that explain why you dance the way you dance, Dave, or is it something different?
No.
Still, you haven't seen me dance for quite some time. Actually, no, you did see me dance recently, probably.
Yeah, I did.
What?
It looked like steroid jitters to me.
The steroid jitter. That's what we'll be doing.
But in reality, it's good medication. We give it to people with pneumonia. It helps reduce inflammation. If you've had a rash, you've probably used hydrocortisone before.
Yeah,
it kind of reduces inflammation. That's a steroid. So that's not actually going to build your muscle still. Like, you can keep lathering it on. It's not going to do it.
What's in asthma inhalers? Are those steroids?
Yep.
Yeah.
Not all inhalers, but there are quite a few that have steroids in them.
Okay.
Yeah, it's like a chronic maintenance one that reduces inflammation so you can breathe a little better. That's really it. There's the difference. I'd say almost every time you go to the doctor, if he gives you a steroid, he's not trying to build your muscle. He's doing something else for you.
Yeah.
Or she. It could be a she as well. And it could be a nurse practitioner, not necessarily a doctor, unless they have a doctorate of nursing.
It could be Dave Jensen himself is prescribing this.
A doctor of nursing. Soon.
Soon, baby.
Our small talk topics to recap. Brontosaurus is back. The guy who made Wonder Woman was creepy.
Nice.
And steroids do not always equal getting huge.
Muscle. This is true.
No, I'm the textbook case for that still. All right, so we're going to go to Ask Off the Chain. We have some reader-submitted questions, but before we get there, Katie has compiled some questions, some kind of rapid-fire questions.
It's going to be a lightning round.
She wants to ask us.
It's going to be a lightning round.
Where did you get lightning round from?
All right, so my new favorite show on Saturday nights when I'm driving home from work is Wits. And
love
I always catch it right at the lightning round. And, like, literally, I'm not sure I've laughed harder than the lightning round. It's hilarious. So I emulated a few, copied some. I will give them full copyright credit that some of them are directly from Wits. So, are we ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Dave, super salad.
Salad.
Steel, spirit animal, what would you go with?
Dragon.
Dave, children, overall impression, any good?
Love them.
All right. Steel, same question.
Yeah, mine I really enjoy. Actually, all children. Well, not all children. Girls are better than boys when they're playing in the yard, but I do like kids.
Nice. Okay. Dave, sexiest state based on shape?
Ooh.
Texas.
Duh. Steel, first poem to change your life?
There was a poem that I found in the Boise Public Library. I've never been able to find it again. There was like this anthology, I think, of Russian poetry, and it was about envy.
You're amazing. I don't even Dave, funniest
movie. I'm sorry, let me rewind that. It was the Boise Public Library, because they have an exclamation mark on the building. I said it wrong.
Oh, look at Idaho.
That's yeah, it's great.
Dave, funniest movie you've ever seen?
Fast and Furious 1-7.
Steel, Dick Van Dyke or Andy Dick? Who wins in a fist fight?
Dick Van Dyke. I can't stand Andy Dick.
Dave, what is the best advice you've ever given?
Go see Fast and Furious 1-7. I tell everyone to do that. It's wonderful advice.
You do that. All right. Now we're going to go to the ultra speed lightning round. These are yes or no questions. Do you believe in the following? 1, true love. Steel.
Yes.
Dave.
Yes.
Aliens. Steel.
No.
Dave.
Yes.
God. Steel.
No.
Dave.
Yes.
Steel. Ghosts.
No.
Dave.
Probably not like in your Scooby-Doo sense, no.
All right, guys, that was lightning round.
Wow.
That was good.
You get exposed a lot.
Yeah. That's what lightning round does. It reaches into your inner core and pulls out
but,
what we
want
to know.
That's like Pilates. Know. That's what Pilates does to me every time.
Nice.
I just have to go to the bathroom.
You got a Pilates man here. I love it. Yes.
So, but we do have some traditional questions submitted by some listeners.
Well, this one comes from our friend Alan S. He's a brand manager in Minneapolis. He says, "Hey guys, my wife and I are thinking about buying a home, and we each have our list of requirements. What do you think are essential elements for any house to be truly off the chain?"
Oh. A functioning toilet.
Check.
indoor slide, Steel. You've got to have an indoor slide from first, second level to bottom
yes.
level.
That's been my dream for a
what
while.
What if you had first floor to basement? Would that be okay, or would that be a little creepy?
It depends what you're doing in the basement, what's happening down there.
As long as there's no ropes in there to tie people up.
I want a lot of pillows at the bottom of the slide as well.
I heard about, my mom had a friend, I guess growing up, they had like a fireman's pole in their house that went from like the third floor to the first floor.
You know what mom was doing on Saturday night with that?
I didn't until now. But
Oh, you're welcome, Steele.
But this reminds me, not this, but I'm reminded of a children's book that I recently read.
About stripping?
Yes.
Dave's crazy. Yes. I don't know if you knew.
Dang it. I can't think of the title right now.
Martha was a pole dancer.
Describe it. Maybe we know it.
You don't know it. But but he goes to this kid's house for his birthday party. He doesn't want to go because the kid's a total turd. He's lame. Yes. But they go to his house and they got a fireman's pole in there. They got a piano they built with like spare parts. They have a pool table. They have all this stuff that they just built on their own. And so by the end of the book, like everybody loves the weird kid because his house is so awesome.
So it can happen. It can still happen for us.
Yeah. Yeah. The lesson for kids is never judge a kid until you've visited his house.
Exactly.
If you visit their house and it kind of sucks, then it's okay to shun and ostracize them. But don't make that judgment until you see their house.
Absolutely.
And that's the lesson I want to share with Alan is if your house is awesome enough, whatever failings you have are made up for having, once you have a fire pole in your house, like you're good to go. People are going to like you.
You know, I use the app Zillow to look at real estate a lot. And I have a family member that will just email each other like our favorite Zillow photos. Like some people just put up insane pictures of their house thinking that it will help them sell. Like there was one where there was a guy that took a picture of himself, like stepping out of his truck, like one leg on his truck, his belt buckle. And then there's like a couple pictures of the neighborhood sign, one of himself in a reflecting mirror. Like he's in the photo taking a picture
That's
of the mirror.
Amazing.
And there was one that was like just a blurry photo of a wall with like a 1980s poster of like a sweet Camaro. And it was super blurry. You couldn't tell any details about the room, but you're just like, I might want to buy this house because they have a sweet poster up. Buyers are going to have to negotiate. Like, I want it in the contract. The poster stays.
Yeah, that's the first question you have, is the poster in?
Right.
That's been fun. I should maybe make a Tumblr or compile a list of these awesome photos from listings, Alan. And you and your wife could add these to your bucket list there.
You know what people are doing now is they're using drones to go through houses with a camera.
The same person I send the Zillow photos to, she just bought her boyfriend a housebound drone for Christmas. So they have a drone that they can fly their iPod throughout the house and make videos like this. So
That's
maybe
amazing.
It's a side career.
They're going to do it. That's great.
I hope so.
What does a housebound drone even mean?
It's just a drone that can fly around in your house.
That's amazing.
It sounds sad. It sounds like we're keeping the drone from fulfilling the drone's destiny.
Nah.
You have to stay in the house, drone. I'm sorry.
You are housebound.
You can't do anything else with your life.
It didn't say housebound on the packaging. I added that. So it may not be actually a housebound drone. That's my error description.
Let the drone free, for goodness sake.
Bumper stickers, free the drone.
Wow. That should take off.
That really should.
I have a nursing question for the both of you. Are you ready for this?
Oh, good. Yeah.
This is from John S. from Galveston, Texas. This person's a skeptic, a medical skeptic, apparently. Should I get a flu shot? I heard it gives you the flu.
Nope. That's it. Period.
Nope to it gives you the flu, or nope, don't get one?
No, yes, get one. No, it does not give you the flu.
Okay.
But it is no longer flu season, so wait till like September or October, John. Mm-hmm. You don't have to go and get it right now. It's not going to really do anything for you right now.
No.
Just do it. You don't get the flu. Every single person says, I got the flu shot, and then I got the flu. It's just not true.
It's not true.
It's all the immunization stuff, Steele. Everyone's got problems with it for some reason. But science, we can trust science on this one. It's okay.
Here's another great question from our longtime listener, Natasha Fox from Provo, Utah.
I love Provo.
Miss Fox.
Yeah. I teach high school math. And, as you might expect, many of my students find it boring. How can I make my math class off the chain, she asks.
So many things. My first instinct was to say, show her your boobs, but no, don't do that.
No, that's not going to work in a high school classroom.
No, don't do that.
In Provo, seriously. You'd have a bunch of kids spontaneously combust.
So
no outlet. No outlet.
My first instinct to make anything awesome, all you have to do is bring in candy. Like, you get M&Ms involved in this classroom somehow, people are going to perk up. I don't care how you do it. Just bring in M&Ms. They can be involved in the math problem. However you want to do it, get them. The kid in the back with his head down, he's going to look up.
The answer that you gave was basically Marcy's Playground number one hit. You guys remember that song?
Sex and candy.
Yeah.
I smell sex and candy here.
You said sex, Dave said candy.
What does that say about us?
They had a lot of really good insight into teaching high school math, apparently.
Nice job, Marcy, and your playground.
Yeah.
It's a fantastic song. That whole album was great. I still stand by it.
He was like a melodic version of the Crash Test Dummies.
Mm-hmm.
And when he says diggity, you know, like in that monotone, the diggity, doesn't he say that at one point in that song? That was a really a great moment of music. What am I talking about?
I don't even know. Cut me off. No doubt.
Yeah, okay. So you got a song. We'll play Blackstreet Front Chain Melodies for you. You want to
cue
that up?
Oh my gosh, please. I can sing every single word, so we can do that.
That's way more urban than Dave's selections will ever be, so.
Well, I'm very urban.
So, let's go to Unchained Melodies, Steele. What do you want to play? What do you got?
Well, you know, Rose was saying that we don't have enough female presence on this, so I only selected music by female musicians for this,
nice.
Which is a lot of what I listen to. This is a really awesome song by a group called Kayatana. The song is called Hot Dad Calendar, and it's about a calendar of hot dads.
Whoa.
Sounds like something I can get into.
I hope so.
I loved it, Steele. That's right up my alley.
I thought it would be. It's got kind of off-kilter, bad rhythm, kind of Riot Girl-ish.
Oh, definitely.
Breaking at the edge of emotion.
Yeah, not that the vocals aren't like very good.
Yeah.
That's hitting like all my sweet spots.
I thought it would, Dave. Plus, it's about a hot dad calendar. I know you got a couple of those in the basement.
Right?
Studs and spurs, cowboy dads.
So to stick with the female theme,
ooh,
this is my daughter's, this is their favorite group, Lucius. We have a record player. We've probably got 50 records. And the only thing the girls know is that there's Lucius and then there's every other record. And any other record is going to be disappointing. So just put Lucius on, Daddy. I just want to play the first track off the album because this is the one we dance to the most.
And the song?
Wilda Woman.
Her eyes are light and clear and fearless like Chicago. Love her anyways.
So Steele, I went and I saw this band, I don't know, on their last tour. It's probably a year ago now. Me and my wife are short, so we got to the very front. So I was like in their business, and the slightly shorter of the two female lead singers, I was like 2 feet away from her the entire show. And I loved the show, but I kept getting uncomfortable because every once in a while she would somewhat lock eyes with me, and I didn't want to do it. I had to back away a few times.
You just didn't want the emotional connection. You're like, don't you understand? I'm here with my wife. It's the same feeling he had when he was watching My Big Fat Greek Wedding. You know, he's got to break eye contact there.
Oh, jeez.
Katie, tell us about Blackstreet and why you picked this song.
Ooh, it came out when I was in eighth grade. And I have a very specific memory of my best friend and I listening to it and singing to it while we were going to a birthday party, and it was raining here in Arizona. And so we had our heads out the window while my mom was driving, and only to realize that when you're driving quickly and it's raining, it hurts a little bit when it hits you in the face.
All right, here we go. Blackstreet, No Diggity. First.
It's going down, fades of Blackstreet. The homies got at me, collab creations. Bump like agony, no doubt. I put it down, never slouch. As long as my credit can vouch, a dog couldn't catch me. Tell me who could stop with Dre making moves, attracting honeys like a magnet. Giving them orgasms with my mellow accent. Still moving this flavor with the homies Blackstreet and Teddy, the original Rough Shakers.
Shutting it down, good lord. Baby got them open all over town. Strictly bitch, you don't play around. Cover much grounds, got game by the town. Getting paid is a forte. Each and every day, true play away. I can't get her out of my mind.
Wow.
I think about the girl all the time.
Wow, wow.
East side to the west side. Pushing fat rides, it's no surprise.
Did you happen to catch the lyric about you got the bump like acne? Because that's what he said.
That's a good line.
Yeah. And the ickasms.
Eargasms, I thought he said.
Oh, was it eargasm? Oh, man.
Yeah, he's giving you an eargasm because it feels so good the way it sounds.
I like the way you work it.
No diggity.
I thought to bag it up.
Bag it up.
I like the way you work it.
No diggity.
I thought to bag it up.
Bag it up,
girl. I like the way you work it.
No diggity.
I thought to bag it up.
Bag it up.
It's a great song.
It really is. It's just the best song.
That song was a staple. I used to carpool to school. That song was on regular rotation. That and Casey and JoJo was being played all the time.
Changes lives. Those ones. Changes lives.
All right. So I got another song for us.
Is it female related as well?
Of course it is. And I need to ask, do we want to go fast or do we want to go slow?
Oh. Could be taken so many ways.
I want to slow it down, to be honest.
Slow it down.
Okay. This is a musician that I've been listening to a lot lately. It really impressed me. Her name is Alice Bowman, B-O-M-A-N, and this is a song called Lead Me.
You're 2 for 2. You hit my sweet spot again. You know right where I'm at right now, Steele. Female vocals, and I'm in. That's all it takes.
For me, whenever there's those songs where you like, you hear them like almost like licking their lips. You hear the intake of breath. You hear the fingers on the frets. There's something about that, the intimacy of the recording that, I don't know, it just sucks the air out of me. And I just want to hear more and more of it. There's something really, I don't know what the word is, sensuous about it.
Mm-hmm.
One of my favorite records from a couple of years ago was by Jason Isbell, Southeastern. Have you listened to that one, Steele?
Yeah, I loved it. What a songwriter, Dave.
He's got a real kind of country twang to his voice. So my wife, she can't handle it. So I have to listen to Jason kind of when I'm by myself.
Do you think but she'll come in the room when you play the song and be like, turn that crap off, Dave?
I can't handle his voice.
I think we're going to be able to get through it with that. But this one's called Cover Me Up. It's the opening track off of it. I don't know how this would stand from like a feministic perspective, but it's basically about Jason seeking essentially for a woman that can save him.
A heart on the run, keeps a hand on the gun, you can't trust anyone. I was so sure what I needed was more, tried to shoot out the sun. Days when we raced, we flew off the page. Such damage is done. But I made it through, 'cause somebody knew I was meant for someone. So girl, leave your boots by the bed. We ain't leaving this room. Someone needs medical help or the magnolias. It's cold in this house and I ain't going out to chop wood. So cover me up and know you're enough to use me for good.
Dave, I was listening to that record the other day when I was folding laundry. And then for like half an hour afterward, I just kept like singing, humming the refrain or the melody of that. And my wife's like, what are you singing? It's a catchy, memorable, beautiful record. And a nice song there, Dave.
Yeah, he's great. I was just showing Katie a picture of him. He's not a handsome man.
No.
But he's got a wonderful voice. Sometimes that's all you need.
Yeah, he's round of face for sure.
He's definitely round. I'm sure he does well with the ladies, though.
Yeah.
So that's Unchained Melodies. And Steele, you were planning to share something else for Book Wisdom, but I think we want to hear one of the poems from one of your poetry heroes.
Okay, I'm going to read two small Charles Reznikoff poems. And these, I think, will give you a flavor for the kind of poet that he was and how he wrote and what he wrote about. The first one's like a story poem. During the Second World War, I was going home one night along a street I seldom used. All the stores were closed, except one, a small fruit store. An old Italian was inside to wait on customers. As I was paying him, I saw that he was sad. "You are sad," I said. "What is troubling you?" "Yes," he said, "I am sad." Then he added in the same monotone, not looking at me, "My son left for the front today, and I'll never see him again." "Don't say that," I said. "Of course, you will." "No," he answered, "I'll never see him again." Afterwards, when the war was over, I found myself once more in that street, and again it was late at night, dark and lonely, and again I saw the old man alone in the store. I bought some apples and looked closely at him. His thin, wrinkled face was grim, but not particularly sad. "How about your son?" I said. "Did he come back from the war?" "Yes," he answered. "He was not wounded?" "No, he is all right." "That's fine," I said. "Fine." He took the bag of apples from my hands and, groping inside, took out one that had begun to rot and put in a good one instead. "He came back at Christmas," he added. "How wonderful. That was wonderful." "Yes," he said gently. "It was wonderful." He took the bag of apples from my hands again and took out one of the smaller apples and put in a large one. And then,
that's good.
Isn't that nice? It's just the simple story. And I mean, there's so much revealed by not revealing too much.
Mm-hmm.
This is probably my favorite Reznikoff poem. It's a short one. It's called Te Deum, T-E-D-E-U-M. "Not because of victories I sing, having none, but for the common sunshine, the breeze, the largesse of the spring. Not for victory, but for the day's work well done, as well as I was able. Not for a seat upon the dais, but at the common table."
You're blowing minds over here.
For the common sunshine, the common table. That's what he wants. I love it.
I think where what your thoughts kind of resonated with me is the telling of stories, because I think that's really powerful and interesting. I think it's a really interesting skill that we don't all have. Just to be able to share a story is really powerful. It's a great way to connect, and I love it. I used to work the wilderness program. We'd be out in the desert. There wasn't TV. There wasn't anything to do. So we'd sit at the fire at night, and the people that could tell stories, it was a gift to the rest of us.
Absolutely. And there's so much underneath the surface of poems, I feel like. That's what's beautiful.
You guys are answering that question we started the episode with. Why do I love poems? You just those are the two reasons that I tried to give, I guess, and you just said them better. And for me, what I love most about Reznikov is that what he says again and again and again in his poems and in his writing is that it's worth it to pay attention to the ordinary, to treat the ordinary with care. And that's beautiful to me, because so much of our attention is focused on the extraordinary, on the famous, on the celebrity. But I think it's the domestic, it's the ordinary, it's the everyday that's worthy of attention. It's worth saying, this matters. And that's something that I love about Reznikov. It's very plain, but it's saying the ordinary also matters. And I love that.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love it.
Well, thanks for sharing it, Steele.
Thank you.
This was awesome. Thanks for talking.
It was nice to meet you, Steele.
Hey, great to meet you, Katie. We'd love to have you on again. This was a lot
of
fun.
Yeah, absolutely. Take care.
All right, thanks. Thanks, Dave. Off the chain.
The other day I went to a work gathering where I was at a table for the first time where people did shots of alcohol at it. I've never experienced it before.
You know, I live in Wisconsin, Dave. People don't even drink water here. It's just beer all the time. They drink beer out of a boot.
Oh, they do that.